Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Anne Ball and Anna Mateo. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Anne Ball.
When Mauricio Lopez came to the United States 20 years ago from El Salvador to live with his mom, he had a green card, but no high school degree. He was 18 years old and did not speak English. So his job possibilities were limited. For a time, he served as a restaurant cook. He learned English while working in a building supplies store. He also became a U.S. citizen. A man who often came to the store owned an HVAC company. HVAC companies deal with the heating and cooling systems for buildings. The man asked Lopez to come work for him. He asked over and over again for 3 years.
I was afraid because I didn't know anything about no electricity or anything related to heating and cooling, job.
The man said he would pay Lopez to learn the job, but the wages during training would be low. The training to get a certificate as an HVAC technician would take 7 months.
You start thinking about bills and all the responsibilities, but he's like, once you learn, everything's going to be different,
6 years ago, the man made one last offer, and Lopez, with support from his future wife, decided to go for it. Within a year, Lopez had his HVAC certificate and became a senior technician. His new employer was proved right. Everything for Lopez was different.
So they gave me the certificate, with them, and then life changed. My life changed for real. So I am happy that I took the opportunity that he gave me.
Lopez works for a different company now and says he is blessed. He makes 2 times the amount of money he made before and loves his work. He is now married and has a baby girl. Lopez is just the kind of worker described in a new report from the Strata Education Network, Lumina Foundation, and Gallup. The report says that American adults who hold certificates and certifications but no college degree report better employment and lives than those without certificates. Lumina says that 5% of individuals without a college degree have a certificate. The report is based on the Strata Gallup Education Consumer Survey of U.S. adults. The survey looked at Americans' educational experiences and attitudes. It involved almost 64,000 participants, ages 25 to 64. No one in the group had a college degree, nor were any in college. All were working. It found that adults without a college degree who have a certificate or certification have higher full-time employment rates than others with no credentials. The report says they have higher yearly wages. It also says they believe their education path was valuable and would advise others to follow. Dave Clayton is a vice president with the Strata Education Network.
What was unique in this research is actually asking people directly about their experiences and learning that they feel that they are more attractive job candidates, those who have a certificate or certification, and also hearing in their own words their sense that they would recommend their path to others like them.
Clayton says the research found that there is more than just economic value to getting a certificate or certification.
So the individuals not only are getting the economic and wage benefits that are documented in other places, but they also have this sense of it was a valuable experience for them in their lives.
HVAC is just one of many industries for which there are certification programs. There are all kinds of healthcare industry certificates, for example. A CPR certificate means you have learned how to perform cardiopulmonary resuscitation. A phlebotomy certificate can help you get a hospital job drawing patients' blood for testing. There are also certificates for work in transportation like CDLs or commercial driver's license. Clayton says it is interesting to see how the income benefits are very different depending on the work the person chooses.
So, security and protective services, architecture, engineering, construction, mining certificates for people in those fields, they report having higher incomes if they have certificates and certifications.
Certificates in education, training, library, or office, or administrative and support worker jobs do not earn as much. Also, the extra income enjoyed by non-degree adults who have certificates is considerably larger for men than women across all kinds of jobs. But whether a certificate brings small or large wage increases, Lopez says he earns a lot from helping his customers.
You go there and tell them, look, don't worry, I'm going to fix it. And then we walk out of their house and you see their smile in their faces. And it's like, wow, you know, awesome. It feels good.
Sometimes it is not just about the money. I'm Ann Ball.
Now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. This program explores common expressions in American English. We talk about them a little more in depth. We give you examples on when and how to use them. We also give you a little backstory on how the expressions began. Now, today, we talk about something found everywhere in the world, rain. If you have ever planned an outdoor party or picnic, you know that nothing puts a damper on outdoor fun like rain. In other words, rain can limit your fun or even make you cancel your party. So that is the theme of today's show, ruining a good time. Or, to use a weather expression, raining on someone's parade. To understand this expression, we first need to talk about a parade. A lot of planning goes into a parade. It often involves richly decorated vehicles and marching bands with valuable instruments. Some parade floats, as the decorated vehicles are called, have speakers and expensive electronics. Sometimes famous people travel in parades, waving from the open tops of fancy convertible cars. Streets are closed, and people line the sidewalks to watch. Whether in a big city or small town, rain on parade day affects everything. That is why the expression, to rain on someone's parade, means we lessen someone's excitement or fun. Or worse, maybe we even ruin their plans. They are really looking forward to something, and we pop their balloon. Another expression meaning to ruin someone's good time. Imagine, if you will, a child playing with a balloon and you came along and popped it. The good time playing with the balloon is over. Now, usually, we do not like to pop someone's balloon or rain on someone's parade. We do not want to be called a wet blanket. This is someone who ruins a very good time and brings everybody down. Imagine, again, curling up on a cold day with a wet blanket. Yuck. Besides wet blanket, we have other names to call these people who can ruin a good time. We can call them buzzkill, killjoy, party pooper, stick in the mud, a drag, or simply a downer. Those names are all interchangeable. However, if you need one to use in a more formal situation, do not pick buzzkill or party pooper. While all of those names can describe a person, we can also use drag, downer, and sometimes buzzkill to refer to the event. So we could say, the party was a real drag. No one was having fun. Or, the event I went to over the weekend was a downer. I can even say, the parents coming home to the party was a real buzzkill. Knowing when to use these expressions is important. So let's go back to our parade expression. We often use rain on someone's parade when we give bad but not very serious news. Now let's hear these two classmates use it in a conversation.
Hey, do you want to come over tonight and study for our exam?
No, I'm going out with some friends tonight. Besides, didn't you hear? Our exam has been rescheduled for next week.
Where did you hear that?
From Theo. He told me yesterday.
And you believed him?
Well, yeah. And I invited some friends to town. We're going out to dinner and then a movie. I already made reservations and bought the tickets.
Well, I hate to rain on your parade, but as usual, Theo doesn't know what he's talking about. I just talked to our teacher, and our exam is definitely tomorrow.
Wait until I see Theo.
If you do not want to use this parade expression, you can also simply say, I hate to break it to you, but... And then you break or tell the bad news. On that note, I hate to rain on your parade, but that is the end of this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
fly, I've simply got to. If someone takes a spill, it's me and not you. Who told you you're allowed to rain on my parade? How much my babe.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today we tell about the movement for civil rights for Black Americans. The day is August 28, 1963. More than 250,000 people are gathered in Washington. Black and white, young and old, they demand equal treatment for Black Americans. The nation's most famous civil rights leader, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., is speaking.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation.
Early in its history, Black Africans were brought to America as slaves. They were bought and sold like animals. By the time of America's Civil War in the 1860s, many had been freed by their owners. Many, however, still worked as slaves on the plantations or large farms of the South. By the end of the war, slavery had been declared unconstitutional. But that was only the first step in the struggle for equality. Most people of color could not get good jobs. They could not get good housing. They had far less chance of a good education than white Americans. For about 100 years, blacks made slow gains. Widespread activism for civil rights did not really begin until after World War II. During the war, black Americans earned respect as members of the armed forces. When they came home, many demanded that their civil rights be respected too. An organization, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, led the way. In 1951, the organization sent its lawyers to help a man in the city of Topeka, Kansas. The man, Oliver Brown, and 12 others had brought legal action against the city. They wanted to end racial separation in their children's schools. That policy was known as segregation. At that time, 2 of every 5 public schools in America had all white students or all black students. The law said all public schools must be equal, but they were not. Schools for white children were almost always better than schools for black children. The situation was worst in southern states. The case against the city of Topeka, Brown versus the Board of Education, was finally settled by the nation's highest court. In 1954, the Supreme Court ruled that separate schools for black children were not equal to schools for white children. The next year, it said public schools must accept children of all races as quickly as possible. In September 1957, a black girl attempted to enter an all-white school in the city of Little Rock, Arkansas. An angry crowd shouted at her. State guards blocked her way. The guards had been sent by the state governor, Orville Faubus. After 3 weeks, a federal court ordered Governor Faubus to remove the guards. The girl, Elizabeth Eckford, and other black students were able to enter the school. After one day, however, riots forced the black students to leave. President Dwight Eisenhower ordered federal troops to Little Rock. They helped black students get into the white school safely. However, angry white citizens closed all the city's public schools. The schools stayed closed for 2 years. In 1962, a black student named James Meredith sought to attend the University of Mississippi. School officials refused. John F. Kennedy, the president at that time, sent federal law officers to help him. James Meredith became the first black person to graduate from the University of Mississippi. In addition to fighting for equal treatment in education, black Americans fought for equal treatment in housing and transportation. In many cities of the South, blacks were forced to sit in the back of buses. In 1955, a black woman named Rosa Parks got on a bus in the city of Montgomery, Alabama. She sat in the back. The bus became crowded. There were no more seats for white people. So the bus driver ordered Mrs. Parks to stand and give her seat to a white person. She refused. Her feet were tired after a long day at work. Rosa Parks was arrested.
For a number of years, the Negro passengers on the city bus lines of Montgomery have been humiliated, intimidated, and faced threats on this bus line.
The Reverend Martin Luther King organized the black citizens of Montgomery. They were the major users of the bus system. They decided to stop using the buses.
At present, we are in the midst of a protest, the Negro citizens of Montgomery, representing some 44% of the population. 90% at least of the regular Negro bus passengers are staying off the buses, and we plan to continue until something is done.
The boycott lasted a little more than a year. It seriously affected the earnings of the bus company. In the end, racial separation on the buses in Montgomery was declared illegal. Rosa Parks' tired feet had helped win black Americans another victory in their struggle for equal rights. And the victory had been won without violence. The Reverend King was following the teachings of former Indian leader Mohandas Gandhi. Gandhi urged his followers to reach their political goals without violence. One of the major tools of nonviolence in the civil rights struggle in America was the sit-in. In a sit-in, protesters entered a store or public eating place. They quietly asked to be served. Sometimes they were arrested. Sometimes they remained until the business closed, but they were not served. Some went hours without food or water.
Buses are a-coming. Oh, yeah.
Another kind of protest was the Freedom Ride. This involved buses that traveled through states from the north to the south. On freedom rides, blacks and whites sat together to make it difficult for officials to enforce racial separation laws on the buses. Many freedom rides and much violence took place in the summer of 1964. Sometimes the freedom riders were arrested. Sometimes angry crowds of whites beat the Freedom Riders. Perhaps the most dangerous part of the civil rights movement was the campaign to win voting rights for black Americans. The 15th Amendment to the Constitution said a citizen could not be denied the right to vote because of race or color. Several southern states, however, passed laws to try to deny voting rights to blacks for other reasons. Martin Luther King and his supporters demanded new legislation to guarantee the right to vote. They held protests in the state of Alabama. In the city of Birmingham, the chief law officer ordered his men to fight the protesters with high-pressure water hoses and fierce dogs. People throughout the country watched the demonstration on television. The sight of people, including children, being beaten by policemen and bitten by dogs awakened many citizens to the civil rights struggle. Federal negotiators reached a compromise. The compromise was, in fact, a victory for the protesters. They promised to stop their demonstrations. In exchange, they would be permitted to vote.
The freedom train is coming. Can't you hear that whistle blowing? It's time to get your ticket, y'all, and get on board.
President Lyndon Johnson signed a major civil rights bill in 1964. Yet, violence continued in some places. Three civil rights workers were murdered in Mississippi. One was murdered in Alabama. Martin Luther King kept working toward the goal of equal rights. On April 4, 1968, he died working toward that goal. King was shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee. He had gone there to support a strike by waste collection workers.
Dr. King was standing on the balcony of a second-floor hotel room tonight when, according to a companion, a shot was fired from across the street. In the friend's words, the bullet exploded in his face.
CBS newsman Walter Cronkite.
Police, who have been keeping a close watch over the Nobel Peace Prize winner because of Memphis' turbulent racial situation, were on the scene almost immediately. They rushed the 39-year-old Negro leader to a hospital where he died of a bullet wound in the neck.
A white man, James Earl Ray, was tried and found guilty of the crime. A wave of unrest followed the murder of Martin Luther King, Jr. Blacks in more than 100 cities in America rioted. In some cities, areas affected by the riots were not rebuilt for many years. The movement for civil rights for black Americans continued, but it became increasingly violent. The struggle produced angry, bitter memories. Yet it also produced some of the greatest words spoken in American history.
When we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.